Hello, this is Leon Daniels, and once again, I'm really proud to invite you to Lunch with Leon. So Lunch with Leon is an ITTHub.net production, and every week I'm trying to find exciting and interesting people from around the world so you can share our lunchtime conversation. I'm really pleased to have as my guest this week, John Klarfelt, who is the chief executive and co-founder of Ticketr, which has completely revolutionized the way in which we're doing our on-bus transactions for fares, for passes, and so on. John is a relatively recent recruit to the public transport industry. He's a qualified barrister, and he's been a butcher, and Ticketr is his third business venture. He's immensely committed to the quality of the product, and he loves nothing more than to see his product being successfully rolled out. So I welcome John to lunch. Okay. So John, how's business?
It's been better, but it's holding up well in comparison to passenger numbers, actually. I think our operator's really suffering, and we're doing everything we can to help. So it's actually exciting in some ways, because I think we can make a difference. For 10 years, we've been doing more and more, but suddenly it's accelerated over the last 3 months where, for instance, we did the capacity measurement. I've always had a dream that, because I hate crowds, so I'd always had a dream that I could catch a bus that would say to me, don't catch me, but the one behind me has got lots of empty seats and it's only 3 minutes away. And everybody laughed at me. And you know what? We've just done it in the last 3 months. So I'm pretty proud of what we've done. We've done a raft of stuff, and we've really had to focus even more than normal. And it's been successful and challenging and knackering, but it's also been fun. And I actually think we've done some good. I hope we've done some good.
Well, I tripped over you, as you know, when I was doing some work right at the beginning of the pandemic, which was when you were just starting to introduce the capacity measurement. And the clients were just amazed, the people I spoke to. As you'd said, that's something they'd always wanted as well, which was just some way of measuring the capacity on a bus. And we'd never had it before. And immediately for people in wheelchairs, what a great advantage, because they know that there's a wheelchair space available. With the pandemic, we've had the social distancing, so we've got that. But even come peacetime when all this is all over, that's the sort of thing that I'm going to use. I'm 3 or 4 minutes away from the nearest bus stop. I already use my app to find out when the next one is due. But actually, I might skip one if I knew there was more room on it. So you've invented something that people always wanted. They didn't know they wanted it. And then some circumstances came along and they realized how much they missed it.
Yeah, and I think what's really excited me is actually it's just the start. I really is. I am just so excited about some of the stuff we're doing now, because I think it's more actually, Leon, now that what we've realized is there's so much more we can do with it. So I think it's going to get so challenging operationally, and to actually have those passenger numbers, to have the analytics on where they get on and get off, and therefore to have the ability to start looking at one's operations better. I think the whole industry is going to change and going to have to change. And I think it is so, I love the industry. I think it's so innovative. I didn't know much about it, but in fact, I knew nothing about it, apart from the fact I got on the number 13 when I was about, from about the age of 5 to 25. And I used to jump off at high speed, which I used to love, but I didn't know much about it. And I never realized just what went into running a bus company. And they're so innovative that some of the stuff we're doing, I think they'll really utilize and make better operational views. That's why we actually started the business, because I couldn't believe that bus operators didn't have live data on which to run their operations. And that's what I'm probably proudest of, what we've done, actually. We brought it sort of up to speed.
Well, you've certainly brought it into the 20th century. There's maybe a bit more work to get it into the 21st century. If we just look back, I mean, the only reason why we can fly two engines across the Atlantic is because there's been real-time data from actual aeroplane engines down to Rolls-Royce headquarters. So we've got to this optimum level of reliability, haven't we? And as soon as it sees a slight drop in oil pressure or something, it makes a note that the next time it's on land that somebody looks at it. So in the days when we used to have to fly with four engines across the Atlantic in case two of them packed up, now an engine failure on an aeroplane is unheard of, almost unheard of, and it's because we've got all that data, isn't it?
Well, it is, but I tell you what, I'd rather fly with four, just in case that data didn't get through or they weren't looking on that day. Yeah, I mean, it's changed so much, and people, the more you do, the more they want, and the more they want, the more exciting it is, and the more they can do with it. So I personally think we're going to get into much more personalised transport where, you know, you should be able to pre-book your bus or an element of the bus so that you can actually say, I'm guaranteed a seat on the bus that's coming down the road. Or at 2 o'clock tomorrow afternoon, I know, and I can look at it predictively today, that it's highly likely that my bus will be empty when it comes down the road. It's all those sort of things that just make travel. I was listening to a webinar just now, and one of them, because I don't normally listen to webinars, but actually one of our people was on it. And it is that trust and confidence. So we're about to do, has my bus actually been disinfected? How long ago? And all those things. We can put that onto the ticket. We've got to give that reassurance to people, and we've got to give to the operator that operational ability to change things depending on what's happening out there. And we're really being pushed by DfT to give them numbers about what's happening and bus stops with high waiting times and so on. And if you can do all of that, you're doing two things. One, you're making the trip better, but two, you're actually helping in COVID, because I'm a bit of a pessimist about it. I think it's going to be here for some time, and we've just got to learn to adapt to it.
I think we have. We'd become very blasé about hygiene, hadn't we? We were perfectly happy about touching handles that other people had touched, and we were perfectly happy about sitting next to people on airplanes or on crowded trains, because I think we felt that we were very resilient to all of these things, and now we're very careful about it. So somebody showed me this week, I've never seen one before, and it's available as a marketing giveaway. It's like a metal thing shaped like a key. It's quite big. And the idea is that you hook it over a door handle and open it so you don't have to touch the handle with your hand. And it works. It's sort of two-ended thing. So no matter whether it's the sort of lever that you have to pull down or it's a handrail you have to pull, what a fabulous giveaway. So I now see these people using these gadgets to save touching something that 6 months ago we'd have licked if we'd wanted to, never mind held it. And I think you're right. I think people are going to be very careful for a long time.
I've stopped sleeping with pangolins now. I want this to go. The thing about it is I'm absolutely paranoid. I feel really strongly about people. We have to have cash on bus because of the unbanked until we can find a better way of doing it. But when you actually think, I feel passionately about these poor bus drivers who are taking shed loads of cash, which is just the highest risk entity. And they're taking it day in and day out and putting themselves at risk. And we're looking at, can we actually do something like financing ticket machines that Kazaz or EMV and Contact and QR, and just finding ways of A, getting more kit out there, whether it's ours or anybody else's, just something that allows greater contactless. And B, to come up with something for the people who don't have bank accounts and so on. How the hell do we actually allow them to travel without handling cash? But also the other side I absolutely detest is the unbanked pay the highest rate per trip. And that kills me. I look at TfL and what they're paying, and I think there must be a way where we can give them something that allows them to pay the cheaper rates. I don't know what it is. We've looked at it time and time again. There's got to be a way of doing it.
It was interesting in TfL because when we went completely cashless in 2014, there was a great concern about the unbanked, who by definition are the people with the lowest incomes. But one of the things we discovered was actually the people with the lowest incomes had locked on to the cheap value buy in advance tickets earlier than anybody else, because of course they were actually just trying to spend less money. So even though they'd got an Oyster card, and they were only topping it up £5 at a go, so maybe they were topping up once or twice a week, the people with the lowest incomes were on to the best deal. So back when we went cashless in 2014, I remember doing television about it, and the interviewer said, what about the elderly? And I said, they're free. And they said, what about the children? Well, they're free. Well, what about the unbanked and the low income? Well, they've already locked on to this deal. They're already buying. They've already got a non-registered Oyster card that's on top up, and they're topping up at the tobacconists at £5 a throw. And every time somebody came up with a group of people, there was an answer for them. And I think, you know, as I say, in London, we went cashless in 2014. We've got a very simple fare structure, which made it easier. But it seemed to me the bus industry has taken, it's taken until now to just do that last forcing off of the cash, because it's taken until now, I think, for people to face it as a thing to do.
I think it is, but I think TfL had such control that they could manage it in a across the board way. When we're in sort of cities with small operators, I think it's much more complex, or much more difficult rather, for them to do it. And I think, you know, I personally believe, especially in account-based ticketing, just travel and someone will tell you at some point how much it's going to cost. And so what I'm thinking about is, how could we actually have some way of allowing people to have an identifier that they do top up, like you said, that account on a regular basis as they travel, but they do get the cheapest rate at the far end. And then we truly can go contactless.
Yeah, I think so.
Or cash free.
And the other good thing about contactless payments of all sorts is it seems to me the public is much less price sensitive than it was. I think one of the reasons why some of the coffee shops can charge so much for taking some water, boiling it, putting some coffee in it and giving it to you for £1.90 is because that £1.90 is not real money, because you just touch your card and leave, and all you know at the end of the month is that you've spent £25 on coffee. I think that price sensitivity will fall away when we're entirely cash-free, don't you?
I utterly agree. By the way, I think it's £2.30 in Barnes. I'm going to have to move. I think the key is that I'm an absolute example of what you say. If I have to actually pay cash across, then I realise what it costs me. If I just tap my card, I just don't even think about it. And that's what I've always felt about contactless, or even QR. Buy your ticket up front. It's when you are constantly going to your pocket to pay, and taking cash out, that you think, I really didn't need to travel that two stops. I could have walked. Just keep tap, 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 and someone will look after it at the end of the week, or even just pay with your card anyway as a retail transaction, as you say, like for coffee, and you just don't think about it. And when it comes in at the end of the week, it's lost in a myriad of other of charges. So I really think, as you say, it becomes way less price sensitive.
So I did something really unusual this morning.
Which, yeah.
I went to a cash machine and drew some cash out. And I can't even remember the last time I did that. Because what do I need cash for? As it happens, I was in a provincial town and needed to pay a taxi driver. But I can't remember the last time I went to a cash machine.
I totally agree. I mean, I literally tap for everything. And funny enough, I was going to go to a cash machine because I haven't had any cash in my wallet for the last month. And then I bought my 100-year-old aunt a fridge, which she said she'd pay me for. And I said, don't do that. I'll take it out of your account and have some cash. But it's astounding. I hate it. I hate cash now. My wallet, I've always had a little, you know, purse bit with for change. Just don't need it. I have, you know, three cards and that's it. And I'll tap for 50p. Whether that's good for the industry, I don't know. But
so that leads us on to another.
Badly sometimes.
that leads us on to another area where the one I'm fascinated about is rail, because on big rail, where the fares are 20, 30, 50, 100, 120 pounds, it is quite important that you keep a bit of a handle. You can't just do like you can with coffee and bus fares. That you do need to understand what the best deal is. And I have always been troubled with whether I go to the man at the ticket office and explain to him in precise detail the journey I want to make, or I research it online, or I go to a machine at the station. I often come away, as I think a lot of people come away, with thinking that maybe there was a better deal than the one I got. And the thing that's exciting for rail with cashless is that the computer could do that work for you when you'd finished your journey, couldn't you? You'd be able to tap in, from in London Zone 1 somewhere. The system would then pick you up as you cross the London boundary. And when you got off in Bristol, you might get the Bristol zone. And somehow the system would work all that out for you. So do you think the public's ready to let the system play havoc with your bank account for those sorts of transactions?
Well, there's two things I'd say. There was a really interesting operator in the north who went for account-based ticketing, and they also had a weekly fare. So the weekly fare was £10.80, and the account-based ticketing was £10 for the week. And you know what? They didn't do – everybody bought the weekly ticket. And it was really interesting to me because they paid more for the certainty. Now, I think that's to do with the fact that they're not used to the TfL approach, and therefore it's a question of trust. And I think down south, I think people are used to it more, and therefore they trust the concept of someone saying, I'll tell you what you owe us at the end of the week. Whereas I think the further away they got from London, the more likely it was that they weren't so used to it, and therefore they were less trusting. And I think it'll come. So that's it for bus. They like that certainty. I'm going to pay £10.80 for my week's travel, even though I couldn't pay 10. I don't trust them. So that was one. On rail, my concern would be, you know, it's one thing finding out that you're not going to get paid for a £10 ticket. It's another to find that there are no funds to pay once you've spent £176, which is very good value for the trip, but you're not going to get paid. So whether you have an account that has funds in it, I don't know. I don't know enough about rail, how you'd pick it up. I do love the concept of just saying, tell me what I owe you at the end. But again, it all comes down to trust. Have you really given me the best? And even when I use some of the, you know, so I like Trainline and I use Trainline. And to the best of my knowledge, I always get the right deal. Then they started adding, saying, well, if you actually broke your journey, even though you don't have to get off, it's cheaper. I found that fascinating because what? I thought that's something I would never in a million years be able to work out, that convolution. And they've done it for me.
Yes, only computers can do that for you, to work out if an artificial break of journey gives you a better deal. I have to do that all the time myself because if I'm traveling outside London, since I have free travel inside London, in fact, the journey I did today was to outside London. So, of course, I need a ticket from the boundary to my destination. And interestingly, only some London mainline railway stations allow you to buy tickets from other than the station where you are. So Waterloo is a perfectly simple one. Waterloo Station, the ticket machines have a button that says tickets from other stations. Well, the London boundary is at Surbiton, so I need to buy a ticket from Surbiton at Waterloo if I'm going to do it in the station. But that's not the case in all mainline stations. So sometimes you have to go begging to the ticket office and say, I'd like a ticket from another station, and then they want to know why, and so on. But hopefully the data processing capability will wrap all that up soon. And we'll have the confidence. But as you say, there's an important thing there. This is a perishable commodity. You don't want to arrive in you don't want LNER to take you to Glasgow, LNER to then find out you have no money.
Yeah. Well, yes, you do, but LNER don't want to do that. And it's really interesting about the breaking of the journey. I'm the same as yourself. I used to get off, though, in East Croydon because I thought that I had to genuinely break my journey. So I used to get off in East Croydon, go up the ramp, get myself a coffee, and then go in using my and buy my ticket there. Whereas then I went off to Trainline and realised I didn't need to do that at all. But I used to add 20 minutes to my journey doing that.
Yeah, you're out.
That's also because I'm a lawyer. So
John, what's happening? What's happening overseas in your industry? Because we've talked about UK, but what's happening around the world?
It's quite interesting. We've bought a Norwegian company called Farah, who do similar work to ourselves, but much more into local authorities and so on. And it's really interesting that maybe it's just Scandinavians and Nordics, but there seems to be an inordinate amount of money with the authorities to keep buying things. So I'm hugely envious about that. It's you know, almost, look, this is too cheap. Don't you have something better? So it's a really interesting approach. I can only talk about from what we see. I think the UK is very, very far advanced against other countries in terms of EMV. And again, I think that's probably come from TfL, but you know, when I think we've got, and just us have got probably 18,000 EMV ticket machines out there, you know, that's a lot of ticket machines for a little operator like ourselves, as against some of these countries that are just introducing. I think there's what we see, Antonio, who runs our international market, says there's a rush to contactless. It's quite interesting, again, for us, that people are buying different elements of our solution. It's very much an integrated solution over in the UK. And I think we have the most complex affairs here. And it's quite challenging when you're doing circular routes with, especially with tap on, tap off, very interesting, and capping. But when I look at the complexity of the fares and the complexity of what we deliver as against internationally, where you get the same complexity of solution, but it's typically run across multiple vendors of standalone solutions as against a more integrated view here. And I think I'm passionate about integration of data. So something as simple as telematics, where there are some great solutions on telematics, but actually what they don't do is add things like ticket purchases, because you've got a full bus and therefore your fuel consumption is going to be different based on the capacity of your bus and how many people are on it and so on. So I just feel that bringing it all together and getting those analytics and getting that into an operational plan is really going to be the biggest output from COVID, actually. I just think it's going to be so tight to make money and to for operators and to actually squeeze the last elements from their resource to be as flexible for the consumer as possible, because that's what I think's get it where it's going to be. When I think back to, you know, I used to go off down from Barnes off to Vauxhall and just pile through those gates at Vauxhall. It was hell on earth, and that's all going to go, you know, and it's how we handle all that and just make it enjoyable to travel when we do, and make it so operationally efficient that we can actually exist as operators.
So my local Waitrose, at certain times of the day, like just before closing time, in the fruit and vegetable department, you can buy tomatoes for almost no money. On the other hand, if there's a shortage of tomatoes, they're very expensive. In fact, every time I go to Waitrose, tomatoes are a different price, as is lettuce, as are carrots, as are potatoes, as are all of these things. So I'm, as a consumer, I'm conditioned that I spend more on salad in the winter than in the summer because there's less of it. I'm conditioned to the fact that at certain times of the day, certain perishable goods will go very cheaply. And I'm conditioned to the fact that under certain circumstances, if I desperately want that particular sort of wine on that particular day, then I'll have to pay £20 for it. Because those are value for money choices that my brain is making for me literally on the hoof. And I come out with a basket, and I mean a basket of goods, that is my best mental trade-off of price versus availability. Now, that sort of applies in aviation. So if we take low-cost airlines, the seat, a ticket tomorrow to Nice might be £45, the day after it might be £55, the day after it might be £15, on a supply and demand thing. So if it works in retail and it works on aviation, that last seat on the bus or on the train is either going to go for £1 or £100, depending on how many people want it. So do you think we could get to a place where there was variable pricing on public transport by the minute?
Yes, absolutely. No, and not being funny, we can change our fares. I can only talk about ourselves. We can change our fares over the air in 15 seconds. I think by the minute is, I'm one of the people, by the way, who goes in late, and I have no idea what I'm going to eat today, but I know if I go in late, I'll see a bargain and I'll buy it. And so it's not only cheap, but it's something different to what I might have bought. So I'm really into variable pricing. One of our customers, for instance, changes his fares 8 times a day based on occupancy, that he knows, you know, peak, just pre-peak, all of those things, and it keeps changing all throughout the day. I absolutely think we have to price things along the airline way, possibly not by the minute, because people want a bit of certainty when they're getting on the bus. If I'm going to travel to Mallorca, I don't care whether I have to look ahead and say, oh, you know what, it's £5 more. I'm not sure I'd want to take the bus and say, I don't know if I can afford the bus, depending on whether three extra people get on before I get on. But I absolutely think we should be pricing based on, you know, we should be putting on services and recovering the cost of those services based on variable pricing. Absolutely believe in that passionately. And that's where the occupancy will come in. So, yes, you know, there'll be the Leon Daniels price, which says Leon always gets on because he can afford it. He gets on. He pays the premium price. And then people like Clarfelt can hope that they can get on, and then other people can't get on at all because they can't afford it. No, but seriously, you know, yes, we should be doing it. We've got to maximise. If I want to travel early in the morning, then I may have to pay more to do so. And you know what? If I can't afford to do it, then I will slightly adjust my travel patterns, either to go a bit before or a bit after, and be able to pay it. And I have to try and get my employer to be flexible on that as well. If you look at the, well, clearly you did, but I'm not very sophisticated about this. When I look at the varying people on the tube and the sort of different sort of people and the times they travel and so on, I find it fascinating. I'm sure you could, if you tied fares and papers, you know, so you'd have the Sun, you get a cheaper fare. But, you know, there's a lot of people reading the Sun on this bus today, so I'm making revenue. Those are the sort of things. I mean, we've got to operate efficiently. And charge for the service.
And John, the government's forced the Mayor of London to do it, but I'd always thought, although for a chunk of my life I wasn't allowed to say so, I'd always thought it was offensive that merchant bankers in their early 60s on £500,000 to £1 million a year travelled free in the tube in the morning peak because a previous mayor had introduced free travel for over 60s. Well, frankly, if you are travelling to paid employment, and frankly, if your paid employment is at the lucrative end of the scale, you really shouldn't be travelling free on the tube.
Absolutely. Well, when we first went into one of our first operators, they never could hold the 9:30 rule. They couldn't do it for the concessions. And when they put our kit in, which could actually hold to that 9:30, it was astounding the way their revenue went up because it was all the people who were on concessions, but they wanted to travel before 9:30 to their paid lucrative jobs, and they were getting it free. And suddenly they stopped getting it free. So I get it free, and I shouldn't get it free.
Same.
You know, sure. I shouldn't get it free.
So, John, I'm fascinated about where the technology is going to take us. So I've been reading Bob Iger, who was CEO at Disney for the last 15 years, and his mantra was, innovate or die. So if I look at some of the previous occupants in your technology space, like the first people that ever brought us electronic ticket machines, we were so fascinated with modules and the data that we got from the modules. It's almost as if we kept on saying, this is a brilliant new thing, for decades after it was a brilliant thing. And in fact, what you did was to completely revolutionize that and show that there was now so much more the technology could do, and at a cheaper price and with smaller units and so on. So on the basis of innovate or die, where does the technology take us next with this? I mean, what are we going to have? Facial recognition?
The aim is not to get on a bus, to get off a bus, and to get charged for it. So we've looked at a whole raft of things. When facial recognition gets good enough, then absolutely. We're looking at the passenger counting at the moment. We're working on cameras and exactly that, not actual facial recognition, but some of the sort of algorithms to count passengers. Yes, it will, you know, it may be your phone. You know, if I was in Norway, I'd say we could do it off your Bluetooth on your phone because the Norwegians apparently never try and defraud anybody unless they don't have the wherewithal to pay, in which case apparently, so I'm told by the Norwegians, we don't want to catch them anyway, so we don't care. I just look at my kids and I think if I said to them, just get on the bus and if you turn off your phone, you don't have to pay, then you know, take your battery out, then I'd never be able to get hold of them even on the bus then. if we can come up with a foolproof method, the whole concept is to go completely intervention-free, totally frictionless. If we could get away with facial recognition, or not get away with it, if we were absolutely certain of it. The trouble is the margin's so short, so small, that, you know, look at it now. You've got a mask on. Can we facially recognise with masks on sufficiently to charge? Probably not right now.
So, John, in that case, there's a business idea for you and I. Why don't we go into business making masks that have got a picture of your face on it so that when you wear it, you look like you and your facial recognition will work?
Now, that's the interesting one, Neil. You can go in that one. I'm going to go on to the one where I sell ones with facial recognition that doesn't look like me, but looks like you. So every time I travel, you will get charged. So that's the way I see it. but look, it is going to come that way. I think there's two things. Is one, how do you take fares without intervention, utter frictionless? And two, and this is one that we can work on right now, is how do we absolutely smash the operational side to say we can charge prices by another 5 pence over the next 3 minutes because it's busy. We can reserve seats and you pay a premium for that. All of those things, we will put a single decker on that journey because we know how many people are waiting at bus stops, so we won't actually put a double decker on. All of these things are going to make a difference. And we've got to give that consistency to our passengers that says, you can trust us. You know, we'll disinfect the bus. We'll tell you this. We'll tell you that. If we're going to run early, we'll tell you through your app. All of these things just make it simple. But we won't do it if you know, with respect to government, it keeps telling people not to travel on the bus or, you know, on public transport. Because, you know, we're just going to sit gridlocked in our cars and all die from under no exercise. So, you know, it is. I don't envy anybody trying to sort this out.
So, John, in our last couple of minutes, we talked about the great fun that we're having in the transport business, and in your case, how much fun you've had since you joined it. So, you know, with kids who want to go off and do something exciting in digital, something exciting in video, something exciting in media, something exciting in goodness knows what do we say to young people to get them to come into transport? Because it feels to me that some youngsters only come into transport because there's nothing else. Well, what do we say to young people?
Look, when I came into it, I was a sort of chancer. And what I've realised is you utterly make a difference. You make a difference. I am so in awe of the people who move, who transport us around, who actually enable what we're doing. So, yes, it's very exciting to do a new game. You know what? It adds nothing to the sum of mankind. But what the guys in the public transport industry, for me, are doing is actually taking people out of their cars, moving them around, delivering this phenomenal. I mean, taking a flight is great. It takes you on holiday. It's not critical. But getting to work is critical. And I can't get to work, shall we say, in London or Manchester or all of these places because I need a car, but I can't get a car into town. Suddenly you've got all these people who can say, I will help you travel and I will unlock this city for you. I'll do it. So for me, it's a phenomenal thing to do. I mean, I know what we do in our industry. I feel just fantastic about that we can change pollution and the way people travel and all of that. But just driving that bus, if you don't drive the bus, there's 100 passengers or whatever you're going to take over the next 2 hours, don't get to work. So you're doing a great job, and it's a very green job.
So, John Klarfelt, what a way to end. Working in transport for young people is a way of improving air quality, doing something useful, making sure that other people get to work, making sure that essential services are provided. And what an exciting time it is in transport, as John has demonstrated, with the huge development of technology giving us things that we never thought we could possibly have, and rich sources of data so we can plan, so as we can deploy, and so as we can make our transport ever more efficient, ever easier for people to use, and hopefully holding down the cost as well. So John, thanks ever so much for joining me today on Lunch with Leon. I hope you enjoyed your lunch.
I did, thank you, Leon. Very, very enjoyable, thank you.
And Lunch with Leon is an itthub.net production. If you'd like to go across to the website at itthub.net, you'll see how you can subscribe to this or other podcasts and also find out all sorts of other bits of news that's happening in the transport world. In the meantime, it's been fabulous having John for lunch, and I look forward to seeing you again very, very soon.